with your staff. Thank you very much. Over to yourself.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. As indicated, we will, in this presentation, really cover the first quarter's report in some detail. We will, as I said, go through some of the achievements in the first quarter, but then mainly deal with the finance issues, which is really our variance in terms of our expenditure, and then we'll deal with some of the challenges ahead flowing from the analysis of our key achievements. Before getting into the detail, I think it's just important to recap that the five strategic objectives we have through all our activities, we hope to achieve the following goals. And so on. So whilst we go into the detail of the specific activities, it's important to understand, firstly, we're trying to really transform our economy and to drive manufacturing sector as the engine for overall development to transform the economy, to expand and grow our industrial sector. Secondly, we understand that our market is very small and we need to be an export. Our growth must be export-led, and therefore the development of regional and global relations is a key part of our work. But also very important that in all our activities we must understand we come from a very dualistic economy, and we need to see that our growth is inclusive, and that's why black economic empowerment and broad-based participation is key. And then in general, we're trying to also create the best possible climate and regulatory environment for business to thrive. And then through it all, we must create a strong institution to deliver on that mandate. So very quickly then, in us trying to achieve those overall objectives, we go into the specific activities and so on. The first one we mentioned, again, dealing with our objective of industrial development. The first one we report on is really one of our newer programs introduced over the past 3 to 4 years, is the Clothing Textile Competitiveness Program. To say that program is still proceeding very well. It has definitely been able to stabilize and slightly expand employment in the clothing and textile sector. And as we always said, that sector is extremely vulnerable because of its the high level of import intensity in that sector and high levels of competition in that sector. And therefore, this program is rolling out and it has managed to stabilize employment. The other area, which I think is, really I won't go through each and every slide, but to say the other big part of our industrial development program has been the use of procurement or government buying power to develop local manufacture. So as you know, we rolled out in December and started really in the first quarter to roll out that procurement program. The one big tender that we designated was pharmaceutical sector, and there we took the first, the oral solid dosage medicines and drugs in the that was rolled out, and we've set a target of 70% must be produced locally. Secondly, we've worked with PRASA, and as you know, there is a major rollout of locomotives and rolling stock by PRASA, and again there we've reached an agreement that 65% of the locomotives and rolling stock will be produced locally. So really, and simultaneously, we're working on a longer term plan to reform our Preferential Procurement Act. We're working with National Treasury because, as we say, we have not, unfortunately, used this lever sufficiently. And really, we have our acquisition of capital equipment for the state has led to massive imports. As I said, that is the main thrust of our work in that area. The other part of our work is really about the special economic zones, and we've, as I said, whilst we've been working on finalizing the legislation in that period, and I'm pleased to announce that the Cabinet on Wednesday approved the revised bill, and we will, in the next week or two, be submitting it to Parliament for finalization. performance of our special economic zones was, or IDZs, was that there was really no incentives which differentiated IDZs from the rest of the country. We're in the same position if you set up in the Port Elizabeth industrial area or in the Kuha zone. There was only a slight, the 12I scheme was the only one which differentiated. So I'm pleased to report, and I think we've got the Deputy Director General Tumelo Tshifuba here, who has been in that discussions, but I think we've made some progress with regards to the incentive framework. Also, we've launched, in that first quarter, we've launched the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program. We've also revised and upgraded the film and TV production incentive. Also, that incentive program is rolling out. I then want to just come, which we will come to later, but here highlight that we are having a slow take-up of our manufacturing incentives, and that is reflected of the broader economic slowdown which is taking place. And as I said, we precisely launched this program to try to give a boost to manufacturing in expectation of the expected slowdown. I think I'll share some ideas later on, but the private sector is in a state of, I think, what one could call pessimism about the future prospects, both in the Eurozone, in the US, but also in terms of their export markets. And they are not, and also the slowdown within demand within South Africa itself, there is a reluctance to invest and to commit. And I think we are developing a program. But you will see that also reflected in the take-up of our incentives, and that, in a sense, explains the variance. So then if we go into detail of the specific incentives, as you can see, there has been a large number of projects has been approved, especially in those under tourism and under the small the MIP, that's part of the enterprise fund, which is for small medium businesses in the manufacturing sector. There has been take up, as I said, there's been take up in the film and television laid out there, and then also in the broadening participation incentives. The one which is where there's been good take up is the Black Business Supplier Development Program as well. As I indicated, the one where the slowdown is really in the area of manufacturing in incentives. If we then turn to trade, as I said, I won't go into lots of the detail, but of course, our underlying strategic objective is really to diversify our trade now, given the slowdown in our main manufacturing export market, the EU, is to diversify trade to the faster-growing economies. Even though there's a slowdown, China and others, they're still growing at about 7.5%, so they're still a big market. So we finalized our strategy and with regard to the BRICS. We've also engaged, as you know, we've got a three-year deadline, and there's 2 years left now, for the grand free trade area, that's the tripartite free trade area between SADC, COMESA, and East Africa Community. And as I said, we've been involved in those technical negotiations with regard to the finalization of that. So we are on track for the deadline to conclude that free trade area for the 26 countries. And then we've also undertaken a number of eight technical and business missions during that period. I think the figures are laid out there, but as I said, the actual visits has been successful in terms of, after these visits, there is a assessment done of actual orders and exports that have been facilitated, and that 1.3 billion was facilitated in that period. Similarly, FDI, as we know, FDI recovered in 2011, and also in the first quarter, there is good progress. We went back to about 40 billion in 2011, and we expect the same to continue with regard to FDI in the country. We also arranged the pavilions successful was the one in Zimbabwe and then in China as well, but also in the other big markets, which is the United Arab Emirates and so on. So on the whole, we've also moved on, as I said, scaling up our exporter development program, and we have developed a new policy and program, the National Exporter Development Program, and that we will shortly be forwarding to the relevant authorities and for Cabinet to adopt our new export development plan. As I indicated, given the slowdown in our traditional markets, we have to now decisively shift our export base to the continent, to the BRICS countries, and to the Gulf states. Then if we turn to, as I indicated, the economic broadening, economic participation, we've an enterprise development section, we're proceeding apace with our red tape reduction program, and that is really to cut out some of the unnecessary administrative and other requirements that we have within different spheres of government, and that program is going. We also, as you're aware, finalized the cooperative bill through DEDLAC and through Cabinet, and it is currently in the House as we speak. We also hosted the International Cooperative Conference, and as you know, we also tabled the Black Economic Empowerment Amendment Bill, and again, I'm pleased to report that on Wednesday, Cabinet, as after it was open for public comments, we received lots of public comments. We've incorporated those into the bill, and it was approved by Cabinet on Wednesday, and it will shortly be tabled in the House for final discussion and hopefully ratification. Similarly, we've completed the revised codes of good practice, and if I can just remind you, the thrust of the new revision is going to be to develop three core elements in the BE Bill, that is to deal with ownership, skills development, and procurement supplier development, and to say that you must score high in those areas, and if you don't score, you get a deduction from your overall score. In that way, you want to shift the focus really to aspects which have been neglected, especially skills development and procurement opportunities for Black entrepreneurs. So that is currently before Cabinet, and it will be considered in the next Cabinet cycle. That's the code of good practice. And secondly, we've been rolling out the equity equivalent program, and as you know, that program is for the multinationals who are not able to do Black economic empowerment in terms of their ownership structure. We have an alternative for them to enter into joint ventures and other kinds of supply development programs as an alternative to equity. And then we've been working with the Black Business Council, and we've also finalized the Regional Industrial Development Plan. If I can then just turn to the regulatory environment, as we know, the next frontier really, after we've now moved on from the consumer and companies, legislation is really in the area of intellectual property. And that area has been doing our focus. As you know, we also issued the very, famous or notorious issue of labeling from products from Israel. That is currently, as I say, going to be tabled to Cabinet soon for the Minister to make a decision on that. But we have received the public comments in that period. Then we've also finalized, as I said, the other area is the question of the national liquor policy. And today there is now a MINMEC or a minister and all the provinces are meeting in the National Liquor Conference, and we've developed those norms and standards in terms of the liquor policy. Then turning to the administrative matters, I think that as you could be pleased to report that with regard to something which has been in the press lately is the question of the non-payment to suppliers and the extensive delays throughout government. And as you know, as the DTI, as the champions of this issue, We're pleased to report that at least 90% of our payments are done within 14 days. So we are well within the timeline. As I said, it's down to now 21 days in total for us to pay these suppliers. I must indicate that obviously there's always a tension between paying suppliers in time and ensuring that all your paperwork and documentation is in order. Because as you know, you need a tax certificate, you need everything. You need to get three quotes. Not only ask for three quotes, but you must get these three quotes before you issue any of these tenders, as it were. And really, sometimes the processes are unnecessarily bureaucratic. And as I said, we are within government or amongst the director generals trying to look at ways in which we can speed up the procurement process itself by simplifying some of the sort of unnecessary, or let's say, technical compliance requirements rather than the substance of it. Similarly, we have worked extensively on in that quarter and generally around our vacancy rate. And as you know, at one point it was in the region of 18%, and that is now safely below 10%, and we at 7.39% at the moment. And so we're on track, and as I said, we want to get it below 5%. Then we've also met our targets with regard to women in the senior management positions, but as I indicated, we're at 43%, but really we need to move to the 50-50 soon. But as I said, there is progress, and similarly with people with disability. Madam Chair, that as I said, deals with the four aspects of industrial development, export, and investment promotion, broadening participation, regulation, and now this is the administrative part and so on. If I can then really take you then to the expenditure, and as you asked, what is the difference between what we envisaged or expected planned to spend and what happened? We, as I indicated, the variance is we are 10% below our targeted expenditure, so we are underspending by 10%. That's the in terms of planned expenditure and actual expenditure. But year on year, as I indicated, we are we at the same point last year we spent 1.5 billion. We now spent 1.6 billion. But as I said, because we had a 30% increase in our budget, that is still now we are still below our actual where we should be. As I indicated, and I'll take you into the detail here. The 10% under expenditure is mainly in two areas. It's the one area is in the area of the incentives, where, as I indicated, the take up of our incentive. Now, if I can explain that, as you know, we in a sense our incentives serve as a, let's say, as a sort of a subsidy or a we co-invest with the private sector. The private sector makes the bulk of the investment, and we give a small portion, basically as a grant element, which lowers their cost of capital. But sometimes, let's say for small medium enterprises, it maybe constitute 30% grant for small manufacturing investments. Now that 30%, and then obviously the private sector contributes the other 70%, and that's the only way you can ensure that your incentives are for viable businesses. Because you are, in a sense, jointly, you're facilitating the entrepreneur taking a risk. But he must obviously see potential in his investment, and therefore he carries the bulk of the costs of that investment. That's the only way one can run a successful subsidy program. But as I said, currently, I think, as you could see, the private sector is sitting on a cash pile. They are not investing, and the key reason they are not investing, apart from many other considerations, is really people invest with the expectation of future demand. Somebody's going to buy the product after they start producing more of it. And as I said, there is a pessimism amongst the private sector that there's going to be no increase in demand from both globally and from the domestic market, retail sales and so on. People, as it was indicated in yesterday's results by some of the big companies, Liberty amongst others, people were over indebted. So even if we have an interest rate reduction, people are now paying off their loans rather than spending more in the economy. So that is it's a slightly, not as pronounced as in the UK, which has gone into recession, and the US, but we still we have a debt overhang in our economy, and that's why consumers are not spending as they normally would. So given that slowdown, we, as I said, I'll maybe at the end make some comments about this, but it was in the incentives. As I said, there is still a big rollout of incentives for film, for others, proceeding for black businesses and so on, but especially in the industrial incentives down. And then the other area where there's underspending is in terms of our agencies. As you know, in the first quarter, some of them didn't take up their full allocation for the quarter, but they have subsequently, after the first quarter, they have taken it up and so on. So that was the reason for the variance in terms of the agencies, and that's why you will see it's under the consumer corporate regulations. And so this just gives you then a detailed breakdown of the monthly, and these amounts are then cumulative, and as you can see, the variance in April was 226 million, 284, and in June it's 190. So that, as I said, again, there we lay out what we projected to spend and what we actually spent, and as I said, that 10% variance. I think that just gives you then the, an explanation. As I indicated, in terms of our payment to agencies, we have caught up with regard to that, to allocation to our agencies, but there's still the challenge. And then if I can then turn to the key challenges we face. As I indicated, the only way we're going to be able to get out of the current, both at the economic level, but also as a department responsible for the manufacturing sector. The two is really linked. I think what we are seeing is a key challenge is that we need to, as I said, diversify our markets decisively. The slowdown in Europe, especially in the southern part of Europe and in the UK, whilst I think it's still proceeding in the northern European countries, Germany, the Netherlands are still proceeding. There's 11%, 12% drop in exports to the UK and to the other, to the Eurozone as a whole. And as you know, the European Union was the biggest market for our manufactured products. And that's why the mood is so depressed, because our major market for exports. As I said, we're also facing challenges in the Asian markets for our raw materials. Iron ore, coal, platinum sales are all down because of the market. So we want to shift, as I said, our manufacturing exports into new, and as I said, we haven't been able to open up, and we're looking at now expanding our offices and our footprint in those markets. The second challenge, as I indicated, is the take-up of our incentives, and really this is the issue we have now been given. We've had discussions internally, but we want to look at, as I said, undertaking a major roadshow and partnership with the private sector in all the provinces, where we actually, instead of just waiting for applications, we now go on an active show to promote it, but also to do it simultaneously with trying to grow our exports to new markets. And so we're also developing a package with our export councils to see if we can't, as I said, make a really intensive effort to start expanding our exports, and simultaneously we might then give some confidence to the private sector that there would be a market for their products. So in summary then, these are our two challenges that we face flowing from the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DDG, for that. that input. Really appreciate it. Members of the committee, from that input that we've got, please raise your hands. And we've got Honourable James here, Honourable Debe, Honourable Mabasa. Right.
Thank you very much,
Okay. Thank you to the DG for the report. I had two questions. The first is to do with the variance, very high variance, 52% when it came to the consumer and corporate regulation section, if you could just talk to that. And the second has to do with the challenge that you are, that you ended with, which there are two key ones that we need to understand better, and the one that I would like you to talk to is the question of why there is such a poor take-up. To just give us a bit more complexity around that, the poor take-up of incentives. Thank you.
Honourable James, Honourable Khadebe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think that the DG is correct when saying that it were the global war in trouble. If America, the biggest economy, is being bailed out itself by China, and then even the EU, the problem, the contagion is increasing instead of decreasing. And then those being our base or traditional markets, then we are in serious trouble. But then, Chair, what is critical is then that when you're having this problem outside, you must try to be efficient internally so that you can leverage whatever strength or rand you're having and then extend it as much as possible. So what I'll go to straight is the issue of industrial development, industrial policy on page 3, Chairperson. On that part, really we appreciate that big contract which was allocated for the pharmaceutical tender of 2.5. Yeah. But at the same time, there's something here which is happening within the field of pharmaceutical industry that we're still importing some generics, yeah, as a country. The issue is the generics which we are still importing, are they safe? Because interacted with the doctors in my constituency, whereby they indicated that they're even afraid now to prescribe the generic, which are not coming from South Africa, because the mother company might give a blueprint for the company which is going to produce the generic, so that in the process, they change the composition of that medicine. In the country, it's not the country, but usually it's from... So what you'll say is that they're being exposed to being sued, because when the doctor prescribes that, eventually the patient is not going to go to that company, it's going to go to the doctor, but the doctor was honest, but he or she didn't know that the coating of a pill is going to be changed in such way that there's more sugar on it, and then the diabetic patients end up being affected. So on the issue of standards, how do you ensure that we are efficient within the country so that these things don't arise? Because if our own health practitioners are going to be afraid to prescribe some of these things, really it's going to lead to the stagnation of the economy itself, because the consumers will not be having confidence in the products which we're having. Number two, Chair, is the issue of the... I'm very happy that the department has prepared a position paper on Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act. Because for quite a long time, you go to different countries. I don't like treasury departments all over the world, but they tend to be governments. They tend to be state within states themselves. So I like us to, if the department can explain, are there any frustrations that are coming from our own treasury in the implementation of this Preferential Procurement and the Policy Framework Act? Because there are certain decisions which were taken far back, whereby there are certain products which were identified so that the historical disadvantaged people could take advantage thereof. Are there any problems which were had with our own treasury here, so that we can be able to face it if necessary. Chair, and then the last one I will come back to later on the second round. The issue of 12i incentives, no, I see it is zero. Can it be so bad that there's no value in because, you know, the treasury was very adamant that is one of the key things which could be driver for our industrial revolution. But if there's zilch, even coming to the uptake of that, what's the problem?
Thank you very much, Honorable Hadebe. Honorable Mabalsa.
Thank you very much, Kobe Chair. Thanks, dear DG, for the input that has been made. Of the people that... that figure, which shows people that are not employed, you know, that the difference between the employed and the potential, what percentage constitutes people with disabilities? Because, you know, that's an area that we must always focus on. And then, also following Member James on the manufacturing incentives, If you can explain it a little bit in detail, what it is, what constitutes it, just so that even before you go to his level of his question. And then, do we think that we will spend the budget by the end of the financial year properly? Because the worst thing that often happens is if funds are returned to Treasury and spent while there is a need for job creation, and there's an outcry that the government is not funding job creation initiatives. So this question, we must ask it earlier. You know, we must ask it continually, because we don't want at the end of the day to find the government rushing to dispense of funds. And then the SMMEs and cooperatives. Of the budget that the department has, are you satisfied that thus far out of what has been spent, adequate proportion has gone the way of SMMEs and cooperatives? I'm asking this taking into consideration rural, informal settlement, because those areas on the main constitute this potential. And the agencies that have underspent, which are those agencies, and what are the corrective measures that will address that question? Let me ask the last one. The payments to SMMEs and cooperatives, you know, when the department pays late, and where we pride ourselves that we are now 90% can be done within 30 days. The 10% that remains outside, are we able to also attach a certain time period to that? Because it will be very bad if we find that while on the average we are able to fulfill in 30 days, but of the 10%, some of them remain unpaid for almost 6 months. So I'm just asking that so that the department becomes particular. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mabasa. I think just while you're responding to that, the DG, if you would just expand on the point that you made by two of the members there with respect to the incentives themselves. You indicate there is a challenge, but can you tell us whether this is because applications are not being made? Are they incorrectly being filled in? What is the actual practical challenge that you're facing with these applications, or are you simply not getting them? Thanks.
I'll just, with some of the questions, the CFO and Tumelo. Maybe if I could, maybe on the incentives, I think maybe we can maybe just kick off with that, because I think, and I'll ask Tumelo to come in and then. That's Maybe something like this, yes, thank you, Chair. Maybe just on the incentive, starting with 12i, 12i, as maybe honorable members would remember, 12i is a tax incentive and it deals with big, large projects. You know, the range of projects that we approve normally in 12i would be of the order of investments starting from 200 million, but the average project that we've approved would be over 1 billion rand in investment. And of course, like the DG saying, that there is a slowdown in investment in the country, so we have seen a slowdown. But normally, our experience in the past with 12i has been that because there are large, big, bulky projects, it's not that you get a project. We tend to get four projects this quarter, maybe another one this quarter, and two. So you don't get a linear every month. So the first quarter has not been good for the year, but we have received about two or three projects that we are looking at this quarter. I wouldn't want to mention the names of the companies. They are large companies, but in general, within 12i also the slowdown is reflected. Then maybe just to talk about the incentives in general, especially the ones which have to do with grants. I think the DG is correct in saying that, you know, what is being reflected in the slow take-up of incentives is also just the general uncertainty amongst business about demand conditions going into the future, especially both domestically and within our trading partners. But the other thing that have, kind of affected the financial performance this year is that we launched a new incentive, the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program. It only came onto stream in the middle of the first quarter. And normally what we experience is that it takes a few months or a quarter or two quarters before the private sector, especially smaller firms, begin to develop a confidence in a particular program. First of all, companies have to see a few companies that have been approved, and then work spread around, and people begin to develop confidence. So we normally don't expect to see a linear increase. You know, you kind of see an exponential growth. You start slowly, and then it just grows. The other thing maybe that we are going to be doing, the DG has already spoken about the fact that we are going to be working with Export Council. What we did in the first quarter, we went on roadshows to all nine provinces to introduce the MCET. And some of the things that we are planning on in the second quarter is to actually do a much more larger marketing campaign. One of the things that we've realized is that businesses take time to learn about new markets, to learn about new opportunities. And what is happening is that, I mean, growth is now no longer going to be coming from our traditional export partners. We are going to be getting growth coming out of Africa, growth coming out of new emerging markets, and businesses may not know about that. So one of the things that we'll be doing about our marketing campaign would be talking about whether trying to get businesses to become interested in looking at new markets, talking about success stories, about some of the companies that have accessed our incentives and, you know, have successfully re-engineered or diversified their marketing, the markets that they serve. So we hope through that way that we begin to also increase to take uptake of the incentives and to get funds to learn much more quickly about new markets.
I will just explain the agency's variance then.
I'll deal with the two issues of payment of suppliers and the agencies. Generally, the department pays all our suppliers well within the 30 days, so we never exceed the 30-day payment. 90% of them are paid within 14 days. The balance of the 10% are paid within 21 days. And we have a very strict procedure in monitoring this, including the incentives that come through to finance. So on a daily basis, we monitor to ensure that it's paid timely. So we have no issue with the payment of suppliers. With respect to the agencies, there's a couple of issues that have contributed to the under expenditure.
I think what the department has done in this financial year is they've strengthened the compliance issues by the agencies. So what we've done is we re-looked at our memorandums of understanding and agreements just to ensure that it is strengthened and the agencies comply. So until that is signed, we can only transfer a certain percentage of the funds to the agencies. And that's a requirement of the PFMA that we actually have that signed. So in order for them to run the operations, we transfer. So that's the one issue. The second issue is because of the lag, because you start a new financial year, and because commitments are made at the beginning of the financial year, there's a lag before they get the invoices in. And some of the agencies felt it's better to take the money when they need it rather than take it when they projected it in February already of the year. So some of those agencies only took their funds in the second quarter of the financial year, in fact in July, beginning of July. The third issue is there was one of our agencies, and this relates to CCRD. In one of the agencies, we just were concerned about the financial management, and the department took a decision that we will transfer monies on a month-to-month basis rather than the cash flow that they submitted at the beginning of the financial year. So essentially a combination of those three that have contributed to the understanding of the agencies.
Let me then just turn to Mr. Honourable Member Mabasa's point. Around the rollout of, as I said, our broadening participation incentives, especially the Black Business Supplier Development Program and the cooperative incentive schemes, and as I said, many of these incentives go into the townships and into the rural areas and so on. Now, there we definitely are rapidly expanding the quantum and the number of people we are helping in this area. And that, as I said, our TAO program is now very active in this field, and as I said, we definitely will be meeting or even exceeding our targets with regard to this area. But we really, as I said, part of creating an inclusive economy is to create the support to let's say, marginalized or previously disadvantaged structures, co-ops and small businesses and stuff. So that one is definitely, the take-up is strong there. If I can maybe then turn to the issue that was asked by Honourable Member Khadebe and James. I think that if I can explain this issue, I think it's basically the interdependence both in the domestic economy and to the global economy. And if I can use the example of our catalytic converter industry and the platinum industry. As you know, it's all in the papers, but Anglo-American share price has fallen by 25%. The platinum price has fallen by 25%. What is happening now? As you know, we supply about 10% of the world's catalytic converters. And we've created quite a substantial industry in that field. That industry is in serious trouble. The reason is that the bulk of, or let's say, I think just under half of platinum is used in the catalytic industry, in the automotive sector. And the bulk of those products goes to the European and US markets for catalytic, for using low emission vehicles because of the standards in Europe and so on. Now, there's been a dramatic decline in the purchase of the autos in Europe. So there's oversupply in the market for everybody has platinum. Everybody can now make platinum, as I said, catalytic converters, but nobody is buying the cars in which those converters are going into. So we see, as I said, the backward linkages. Japan is still the largest maker of converters. So, but we have a substantial share of that market. So we really have a crisis now. It goes back then into the mining sector, because now the mining sector has to cut employment, they cut investment. As you know, Anglo-American have stopped one of their big capital expenditure program in the platinum sector. Now, of course, we are still a very mining dependent. The bulk of our exports are still raw materials and commodities. So we have a drop in exports. We have a drop in demand for manufactured products. As I said, there's an increase in unemployment and so on. So it's really the interdependent nature and so on. But as I indicated, our way out of that problem is because luckily there is the positive side. Firstly, that given our location, we were in our meeting with the exporters, just take the fruit exporters. They're saying now at least 25% in the market, and the fastest growing market is now the continent. So they're very bullish about that. They're also bullish about, for example, Russia is buying a lot of our products. And there's definitely potential. There's potential in the Gulf states. There's potential in China and other markets and so on. As I said, so at least there's one part. So it's only those companies who are already currently exposed to the new markets who are much more confident and so on. Like you take, for example, in the processing industry, Oceania has a big footprint in Asia. And they are proceeding well, but there's a downturn in Europe and so on. So as I indicated then, to break that loop and that cycle would be we've got the basics of the package together in the manufacturing competitive enhancement package. We've got a good program in place which can really lower the costs of investment for an entrepreneur. But they need to be persuaded just to have the confidence that there is going to be an upturn soon, or that we'll be able to break into new markets and so on. So I think that is going to be the solution. But also because, as you know, we undertook the visit to China. We've given them our 10 products. They've committed now to develop an active import policy. It was raised by the president at the FOCAC meeting about a month ago, where we said that China has to buy more manufactured products from us. They've committed to do that. So it's really to now operationalize that arrangement and so on. So as I said, I mean, on the question then from Honorable Mayor Khadeva, will we be able to spend all our funds? I think we confidently will be able to reach our target by the end of the financial year. Already, as I said, even with 12i, in the first quarter, there was no approvals, but subsequent to that, there is investment proposals coming, especially in terms of the multinationals that are applying for the 12i incentives and so on. And I think as we also move to the December period, the manufacturers will start gearing up for the December period. So I'm confident we will be able to at least do it. But as I said, we're going to be undertaking a major marketing drive to ensure that our incentives are taken up. We've also developed a flexibility now, and we've agreed with National Treasury that even if, for example, one particular part of the program, for example, automotive, if there's a slow take-up there, we can shift that into other sectors, which is perhaps growing. As I said now, we can put more money into export development, and it's not so rigid anymore. So we have more flexibility in terms of flexibly moving our incentives into areas where there will be greater take-up. Madam Chair, I think that Honorable Khadebi's point about the pharmaceutical, I think, yes, that, as I said, apart from, I think it's the third or so biggest import sector, I mean, apart from oil and I think machinery, it's pharmaceuticals where we have the highest level of imports. And also we have the general problem of lots of generics being imported and so on. As I said, we've turned around that issue. We firstly, in last year, we did the ARV tender, which was then the bulk was produced locally, and now we've got the oral solid dosage. So we will be making them. And this oral solid dosage is a lot of the generics which were imported before. So as I said, they're currently with that tender, but as I said, the minister gazetted it already as a designated sector. So the Department of Health is currently busy with that tender, but that will give a big boost to our local manufacturing sector because we will be, as I said, be procuring. We have an agreement with the Department of Health that definitely is 70, if not more, must be produced. That will be a minimum will be produced locally. So the other leg, as I indicated, is that this is our money we're spending, and if we can redirect that, it can give, and as you saw the announcement, and I can deal with the issue of our National Treasury, I think we are now cooperating very well with National Treasury. There is, as I said, I mean, there's a lot of persuasion and
work that had to be done, that we need to focus on localization, but they've adopted it there now, and since December they have now promulgated all of the regulations that we gave them. We gave them the first six, as you know. They've just concluded the notes for everybody. It was a bit of a delay in getting the practice notes going to procurement offices, but as you could see, in rolling stock it's been finalized in terms of our locomotives and so on, but also especially labor intensive sectors like clothing, textile, footwear, leather, and especially the textile. So that massive procurement of hospitals, the defense force, the police services, correctional services, others, all those products, and that is really the boost that I think the industry is looking for. Given that demand is falling, the government stepping in as now a buyer in these markets is something which can, I think, give the manufacturing sector a bit more. And we saw that in yesterday's paper with the clothing and textile sector. So I think, Madam Chair, that covers it. And I don't know if there's on the disability issue.
I think what has been done around the issues of people with disabilities is the target that has been set, which all the divisions, one in terms of employment, have to adhere to over and above, obviously, the departmental targets. And we've established now relationships with organizations of people with disabilities, including institutions of higher learning, to assist us in bringing in the pool of people with disabilities into the department to make the process a lot more easier in terms of the recruitment.
Thank you very much. There's just one thing which perhaps was implicit in some of the questions being asked, the reference by many of our members, and indeed yourself, DG, to, you know, the synchronized slowdown in internationally, globally, but specifically in one of our major markets, Europe itself. You referred to catalytic converters, the sale of cars slowing, and the impact there. Now, it has been said by many of the economists, indeed among our own government itself and the public sector, that one way of overcoming this is to increase the competitiveness within our economy, among our manufacturers, etc., but also the efficiency. And what are we doing in DTI to encourage that to move ahead? The other thing is with respect to Zimbabwe, I believe there's a surtax on finished products coming from outside the country. Now, we have quite a high trade with Zimbabwe. Now, how is that affecting the goods that we're trying to export there? You know, because now with that surtax on, it's going to perhaps decrease the demand, if you like, for South African products in that particular regard. And perhaps the last one, which you also made reference to, the what did you call them, pavilions and exhibitions and another way of a window onto the world. But we do also have, ministers of the economy or what is it, trade attached to many of the diplomatic missions overseas. At one stage that was on the decline. Is this still on the decline? Why is it on the decline? If it is on the decline, is there some policy behind that, or what is the challenge? Overseas in our various missions, etc., there used to be someone from the trade and industry attached to each one. Now, at one stage, there was a reference from trade and industry that there weren't enough. We didn't have them everywhere. Now, is this still the case? Or have we taken another policy approach and said, let's go for exhibitions and pavilions? I think that's the clarification. But let me look on the right here for both follow-ups as well as fresh questions on the matter. Honourable James?
Just following on your comment, Chair, I just wanted to press the DG on a couple of issues. the first, I mean, the observation, there's clearly a slowdown in take-up because of the global economic environment, especially in the Eurozone. So I understand and then take your point on it. But surely that's not the entire explanation. Could you say something about whether you think that the incentive structure, the incentive architecture is calibrated properly? Do we need to provide more incentives? Must it be smarter? Must it be targeted in a particular way? So that's the first issue. The second has to do with, let me make this point by illustrating the following example, and I'm not trying to score political points here at all. 70% of all new British investments are coming into the Western Cape. Now, if you do it by source, then clearly India's distribution in the country might be different than China and so on. But what they say is that though they like to do business in other provinces, those provinces don't have platforms to receive the investment. So if you want to put money into the Eastern Cape, there's no platform. And there's no premier would intervene to get things right and done. And so therefore, on a national level, you might be doing fine. But when it comes to looking at local conditions, there's this very serious problem in terms of being able to receive investments. So could you just spend a little bit of time in giving us an analysis of why it is that we're doing badly, actually, at this time, nationally, not provincially, but nationally, by just talking about the architecture of the incentives that we have presently and the platform to receive it?
Question or comment from... I don't know if that was just a joke you're sharing or what Honourable can hear me, but Honourable Mabasa.
Thanks, Comrade Chair. The response that we got on people with disabilities, it is not the first time, DG, that we get this response that says there are measures, there are relationships being established. So, with time, you know, I had thought today the answer would be more, it would have figures. Otherwise, I want to believe it is vague. You know, if we don't have the figures here, maybe even if they can be submitted later, because it's only when you become conscious of what you are missing in figures that you can adequately address the issue. Because we don't want to be embarrassed at the end of the year, financial year, only to find that. And there are many people with disabilities that don't feel the impact of being in jobs, you know, in a relationship with government. So, DG on the part of SMEs, cooperatives, as well as this division, the difference between rural and urban. And that also relates to provinces. There are certain provinces that are just so rural that if we don't consciously map where we are working and see the impact, not just in a popular manner, but we must be able to start to say in that municipality, this is what we as DTI are doing, and this is the impact, and these are the shortcomings. So that we, that way, we can see the country in totality with regards to our impact. You know, I'm just posing this as a challenge. Thanks, Comrade Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Mabasa, Honourable Khadebe.
Chairperson, I think that the what I have said on the issue of the incentives is that, one, when the budget is presented in Parliament, there are public hearings. Even before that, during the end of midterm term, the budget policy statement of the Minister of Finance, that the statements shall be made. So I thought that during that time, the government is preparing the industry about the things to come. Né? That's why I'm worried about this issue of synchronization of the uptake of PFI incentives. Né? Because we have expected that the industry, the department is engaging with the spontaneously that really we need you to move faster because the economy must be built as of yesterday. Now, I think that that part of synchronization, I don't know whether the department has got, do you proactively engage them beforehand or do you allow them just to voluntarily and drag themselves out of the holes to come out in it? Because if nothing was done, I think to make a difference, a huge difference. And then, Chair, on the issue of industrialization, I think that the department is still owing us a report, in particular on the issue of iron ore, that tripartite type of that. I think that the TGC, I think that the time is of essence. Chair, when you spoke about the Preferential Procurement Policy Framework Act and those things which were designated, it's more than 5 years. It's almost 5 years down the line that the Treasury and the department that are trying to synchronize things. So even this issue of iron ore, Chair, the years are passing by. As the years pass by, what is happening is the economy is suffering. So when are we going to get that report? What are the glitches that we are not receiving that report on time? Chair, the other issue which I'll raise here is the issue of the tripartite free trade agreement. Chairperson, you said that before. The tripartite free trade agreement is a very important agreement which is going to, one, improve infrastructure in between countries, plus promote trade, intra-Africa trade between the various countries. Is the department putting enough resources to ensure that that thing is being implemented? Because we had a high commissioner here who could not understand, who was not sure where we are. So then I was worried, okay, in particular, then I was worried that such an important key project, a high commissioner of the country, is not sure of the facts which are concerning that. So what resources is the department putting so that when you speak about those issues, everyone must be speaking about that. The last one, Chair, is the issue of the Cuban package, the disbursements that are taking place. Thank you.
Have they taken place? Right. I think if the department can just respond to that and touch back to your catalytic converters. You mentioned Japan had a larger stake than ourselves. One can imagine that Japan, being the enterprising country it is, may even undercut us in order to be able to sell those converters and retain their market share, as it were. And what are we doing about this on the competitive side? Thanks.
Thanks for that round of questions. I'll just quickly hand over to Melo to just make some comments.
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, DG. I think the Chair mentioned the issue of one of the best or one of the most effective responses in the face of this slowdown would be to encourage competitiveness. I'm just going, competitiveness is a broad concept, obviously. One of the things that affect competitiveness would be issues like education, skills, the infrastructure in the country and so forth. But there's also, in-firm competitiveness, how firms organize production, how they make use of new technologies, work processes and so forth. And in fact, it is precisely that we are trying to target with the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program. What Minister normally says is that what we saw in the recession after 2008 was that most of the firms that went out of business or that suffered the most in the recession were actually those businesses that had not, prior to the crisis, given enough attention to the issue of competitiveness. And the Manufacturing Competitiveness Enhancement Program is looking precisely at that, at asking firms and encouraging them to look at, within the firm itself, becoming more competitive, looking at work processes, looking at technology, looking at training of workers. And then the second issue relates to the slow uptake of incentives and to maybe the issue of calibration, the issue of maybe working with the private sector and preparing the private sector. Our budget for incentives, I think last year was close to about 300 another $1.5 billion to take it up to $5 billion. That's a massive increase. And it was announced by the Minister of Finance in the medium-term budget policy statement in September. After we received that confirmation, we started working with both Treasury and with the private sector. When we develop incentives, key of the stakeholders that we work with National Treasury, and we also work with the private sector, because there's a philosophy behind most of our incentives is to actually be market conforming. We work with the private sector in identifying where are the market failures, and we then try and address those market failures, but to ensure that, as the DG has already indicated, that we are not misusing, or to ensure that we are calibrating properly, or that the funds are directed to the areas of need, we insist that wherever we are going to be providing a subsidy, the private sector itself must co-invest with us. We do not take all the risk by ourselves. We believe that one of the ways that we can be sure that the money is being used appropriately is if at all the private sector is willing to also invest in the activities that we are going to be investing with. And so in terms of calibration, what we did then, we would normally give out guidelines. We would interact quite extensively with the private sector. We would take their comments into account, and the final package would reflect both the knowledge that lies within broader government, DTI, Treasury, and also the input that come out of that we receive from the private sector. And so that is how the package is structured. And what we did with just to go back to the issue raised by Honorable Khadebe, to make sure that we prepared the private sector, we made sure that the architecture of the program itself was available to the private sector. I think maybe starting since last year, we signaled how it would look like, what would be the kind of elements that would be available. Of course, there are certain administrative things that we had to put in place also. We had to create an IT system to be able to receive applications and train staff, make sure that staff would be able to respond to that. And we starting in September, 6 months later, we had a program, literally a 5.8 billion rand program that is going to be running over 6 years. So we do think that we responded with adequate speed, you know, to make sure that we get this incentive to the private sector, and we believe that we've received, you know, we've taken into account sufficient information to make sure that they are properly calibrated and that they would be really addressing the kind of problems that the private sector is facing. And just maybe talking also about the investment. What we have observed also within the incentive area is that one of the things that really affects the pattern of investment in the country is how the country looks. You know, it's the past. There's a certain past dependence in terms of where does investment go. So most of our automotive investment incentives would be spent in the Eastern Cape, because we've got two of our largest, auto assemblers in the Eastern Cape. It would also be spent in KZN, because we've got one of the largest assemblers in KZN, and also in Gauteng. And hence, I think maybe the DG will talk about that. One of the things how we are trying to break that historical pattern would actually be through the SEZ program, where we think that by placing infrastructure in areas that have got high potential, we begin to break this historical pattern whereby about three or four provinces account for the bulk of the investment that is coming into the country. Maybe I'll answer the question.
Before coming back to that issue, let me firstly to Honourable Member Mabasa, I think on the question of disability, I think let us take your point, right, that I think we need to maybe increase our efforts to really do some more work in terms of creating a favourable employment environment and to attract and to increase our targets with regards to and our performance with regard to disability. So I think when you
Shortly, when we come for our next quarterly report, we'll be able to give you a report on the efforts we will undertake, but we will definitely expand on that area. Similarly, if I can say to Honourable Member Khatebe, yes, on this iron ore issue, it is, I think you, the Minister, is as frustrated as you are with this issue. But as I said, and it is because of that frustration, and I think your constant questioning as well of it, he did call a final meeting of the Ministers. As you know, it's Minerals and Energy, DPE, EDED, and he said we must now finalize this matter. So they met and they finalized the discussions, and we are busy preparing the cabinet memorandum to take to cabinet on that issue. And then just to say, unfortunately, what has been dragging down this matter is the court dispute. As you know, Kumba, in a sense, won the court application to set aside both ArcelorMittal and the Department of Mineral Resources are appealing that decision. So in a sense, that matter is also sub judice. And then also, the talks between Kumba and ArcelorMittal on that cost plus 3% for the 6.25 million tons of iron ore, those talks have broken down between the two parties, because you know they agreed on an interim arrangement and so on. And then what happened is the minister called the two parties together day before yesterday to get them to sit around the table to try to resolve the problem, because as you said, we've got a country to grow, and the sort of people arguing about the split of profits between really, which is essentially what it is about, is the minister has now appointed a mediator to try to resolve this dispute between Kumba and Mittal, and for them at least to come up with an interim arrangement until, as I said, government will make a final decision when cabinet meets on that pricing arrangement for iron ore and so on. And then similarly, I think that yesterday the Cuban package is proceeding, but I think we'll give you a more detailed report on just exactly what has been paid out, which parts of the package, and so on. I think, yes, on the issue of the tripartite free trade area, yes, I'm quite surprised the Commission is not, or High Commissioner is not fully attuned, but as I said, that negotiations, and especially from Kenya, has been one of the real Kenya and the East African community are actually the fastest drivers of this, of all the three RECs, the Regional Economic Community, SADC, COMESA, the East Africa are the most, because they already are integrated market amongst themselves. So I think they're pushing it. But as I said, we have tabled a proposal and it has been adopted that basically for this free trade area, we adopt the SADC model. Because as you know, we've already got free trade, no tariffs within the SADC region. We say that we roll that same out arrangement that all the regional communities must offer each other free trade access. And then obviously there's just a number of sensitive industries that we have. For example, our clothing and textile sector. We can't, for example, we can open up that market 100% with one-stage transformation from most countries, but you can't, for example, maybe give it to Egypt. So we have to just look at our sensitive industries, but on the whole, we are making an offer of opening up, let's say, a tariff, zero tariffs on almost all products, on 80-90% of products, and we just look at countries that have sensitive industries, that we just look at that, how we preserve those sectors and so on. But also, more importantly, on this regional integration, there has been now, as you know, the North-South Corridor project, which is a road and rail link from Dar es Salaam to Durban through about 10 countries. Now, that project, as I said, is now picking up very fast. We've established an interdepartmental committee, which is chaired by DTI and DERCO, and we are now, and the President tabled our report and project plan at the last AU summit, and we're also now signing an agreement or a treaty between the 10 member states of this North-South corridor so that we can roll out the infrastructure project and so on. And then, as I said, with this North-South corridor project, the infrastructure project, it is massive opportunities for our construction companies and our manufacturing firms to be able to supply the the cement, the steel, the railway lines, and so on. So it's a massive boost for our industry as well. So that as I said, that is also proceeding. I think, Madam Chair, to finally come to your point, which I think you've raised a fundamental point about the competitiveness of our sector. I think we've said that given the slowdown, the companies that are going to survive and the countries that are going to survive are only those who are the most competitive. The others are going to, in a sense, go under during this recession. So that's why, as you say, as Tumelo explained, all of our incentives are premised. You must, for example, the clothing and textile allowance. In order to qualify for that incentive, you must specify what competitive measures you are taking to able to improve your production process, the skilling of workers. You need to come up with a competitiveness improvement plan. So we don't just give you, have access to the incentive without undertaking competitiveness enhancing, energy efficient measures, and so on. So I think that is the core of our program, because, as you know, in many countries they adopt subsidies for inefficient industries, and all you do is, instead of like you have now, as you saw the march by the Spanish coal miners, and so on, they are heavily subsidized because those operations will be inefficient or it would close down if it wasn't for the subsidy. But in our program, we are not trying to prop up industries which are inefficient and uncompetitive. Our incentives is linked to, and that's why you can see our automotive industry, it's growing, it's expanding because of our incentive program and so on. So I think that competitiveness is the big problem. But currently, the current slowdown is a classic Keynesian problem. It's a problem of demand. As I said, we managed to massively expand our catalytic vertical sector from almost 0 to 10% of the global market. So we are competitive in supplying catalytic converters. But as I said, the slowdown is now, it's not how much they can produce. If you give them 1 million orders tomorrow, they can definitely ramp up production and produce them cheaply. The problem is there's no demand. And as you say, when there's no demand, the price falls. So what you get, what you got before, next month you get now 25% less revenue because the price of the product has fallen and so on. So we do, and that's why, as I said, the key thrust must be to both increase our competitiveness and stimulate demand. And that's why through the procurement program, through expansion onto the continent and into Asian markets and so on, we stimulate demand simultaneously as we do our competitiveness improvement. I think just a final point on the point about the performance with regard to provinces and so on. As I indicated, in 2011, 2012 year, as I said, the economy grew at 3%. And we created 306,000 jobs was created in the year. So the economy is recovering from the first recession. 300,000 jobs. And as I said, also foreign direct investment fully recovered. We went from 10 billion in 2010 to 40 billion in 2011 and so on. So as I said, and I think that's across the board and across the provinces and so on. So I don't think there's much around differential performance of provinces. As I said, it depends on the sectors. As I said, because automotive has expanded, the 14 billion in investment, that is mainly in Toyota in KwaZulu-Natal, because they've got an automotive industry and so on. As I said, the Western Cape is performing extremely well on business process outsourcing. And as I said, because they've got quite a strong industry, they've got a competitive advantage, because it's a beautiful place, everybody wants to live here. And so on, and that's I think why they're attracting the film industry is also coming. So I think it depends on the sector how the provinces perform, but I think that covers most of the questions for the
chair. Thank you very much, DDG. We are going to release you, but there are just a few things just as it were at the moment. One of them relates to that breakdown with respect to the entities and the tranches that they have been receiving. And just a little notice to, it's the a preference to get it only when the invoices or whatever, just that kind of thing. And the second one relates to one that wasn't really raised in the meeting, but it's going to help us with the budget, and that's the legislative mandate, which, as you know, has changed somewhat. I think, for example, the Estate Agents Act is still under DTI, you follow. A few things like that. Perhaps, I know that's what I'm saying, that with a smile on my face. But if that's your legislative mandate, which was on the in the strategic document, if you could just revise that somewhat. And then in coming back to us in writing, just indicate, I'm going to just number them because they were numbered here. Number two, which is on the lab laboratory practice, they were indicating pressures, financial pressures, etc. The other one was also the Shared Blocks Control Act. Is that also part of the estate agency one or not? Or is that referring to shares in terms of the stock exchange, etc.? I think it is. The Trade Metrology Act will all be making reference to funding issues. So just a few of those which you have heard raised, and whether or not they fall under the DTI mandate, some of the ones we've made. You've come back to us in writing in that regard. But thank you very, very much for coming to us with clarifications on this quarterly budget exercise, because that's supposed to be the one that raises the flags as to where you are going and is there a glitch or two, so that we can pick them up and follow through in the second quarter itself. And if there's anything you believe you should share with us that you have not shared with us, overlooking it, please don't hesitate to let us have that in writing as well. But thank you very, very much, DDG, for the whole team effort that was put in here. And to members, it's a short tea break. They've got enough food there or cool drinks for a blooming army. But never mind.